Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music back on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Mo, joined by the King of the Casters, the man with the golden voice, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, it's guest time, which is lucky for the listeners, because otherwise they'd have to hear us.
Well, you know, we can talk. Not all the time. Nah, it's for the best if we don't talk. And in this case, we're going to turn the microphone over to our special guest. As you say, he is the bassist for the band Wilderun. He is Dan Mueller. Dan, how are you?
Very good. How are you guys doing?
Well, we are great because we get to talk to you and we get to talk Wilderun. And I got to be honest, I'm a really big fan of the band, especially this album, Veil of Imagination. I think it's amazing. So, you know, thanks for stopping by to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Glad to be here.
What's it like for you? You know, all of a sudden you got Century Media backing you. What's that like? Is it a different experience? All of a sudden, the band's name is able to get out there with a real record label giving it a push. How's that been?
I mean, so far it's been really good. Granted, we're only a few months into it, but I mean, so far, we're just getting introduced to all these different people on the team, and everyone's helping us out with each individual little process, and everyone's just so organized and like just really knows what they're doing. So it's nice to be on a team with a bunch of good people.
So in this case, whose decision was it to re-release the album? I mean, especially like put it out on vinyl and that kind of thing for July 17th.
Well, that was something that we definitely wanted out of a record deal, is to have that extra push behind that record, because it's one that we're very proud of. And it's something that I think deserves the attention of a label and the backing to kind of get that out there. So we had a couple of different labels that were looking to see about signing us, and that was one of the deciding factors, was that Century Media had a really good plan and deal as far as how to re-release Veil, as well as put forth new music for the future.
And I know that they have the rights now to Olden Tales and Deathly Trails and Sleep at the Edge of the Earth, right?
No, actually, that was not part of the contract. So those are still, that's one of the things that we were able to negotiate to have still under our own belt. Mm. And we'll figure out a way to redistribute those, because those currently are sold out in physical form.
Well, yeah, I mean, Edge of the Earth was, so incredibly well reviewed, right? I mean, right. You do want to get it, I'm sure, out there again. And obviously you've taken a song off of it and here in the quarantine, and you've redone it and put a video out for it. But yeah, I mean, is it a lot of pressure for you guys to, when you have an album that is that well reviewed, many people are listening to this album of the year and made a lot of lists. Was there a lot of pressure coming into this to try and, cause it's a Veil of Imagination. It's very different.
Yeah. I would say that there's the natural pressure of each time we've released an album that there's more people who are going to be listening to the next one and coming in with their own preconceived notions of what the next record could be. So there's, I think that's, from an artistic standpoint, that's the most pressure that we felt, is kind of, because we knew going into it and as we were writing it that the folk elements, for instance, we're going to be taking a little bit of a backseat on that record. So we're kind of like, well, how is that going to be received? Or is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Or are we going to lose or gain more fans? Turns out that we've gained more fans, but I think that comes less so from grappling or not shining as much of a spotlight on the folk aspects, but I think it just comes from just having tighter songs for this record.
When you write a song, especially with all the elements that you wind up putting into your music, how do you approach that because we're talking about 11-minute songs and longer, mm-hmm. How do you approach writing that kind of song?
It's something that we generally work in kind of a through composed fashion, meaning that when we start writing a song, we start with the beginning of the song, and we just like Evan's the guy who does most of the writing of melodies and arranging of the structure of the song. And so he'll always kind of just start out with just the first riff you hear in any song is likely the first thing that was written for that song. And then you just kind of, you know, you play through that until you figure out what needs to come next. And then you play through those two things and you figure out what comes after that. And now you play through those three things and so on and so forth. And then the rest of us all come in once he's kind of got a skeleton of a song and we just put all the meat on it.
Because it's a very, you know, it's and then with all the different instruments, like how do you choose those to layer on top?
Well, a lot of it is that we like the sound of all these different instruments and we like these kind of textures and they all kind of emote different aspects of the song. Now, we do take care of that, like, that it just doesn't sound totally like a hodgepodge of random sounds. So we might have, you know, come to a part of a song and be like, oh, it'd be really cool to have this instrument on, like let's have a banjo on this part. It would sound really cool. And it does sound really cool in that song.
It does,
or
sure.
in that part. But then we might be like, but there's no room for banjo anywhere else on the record. So let's not use banjo because we don't want something like that to just like come in randomly. Everything does have a purpose and needs to serve the album as a whole rather than just that little snippet of either a song or a part of a song.
How did everybody kind of figure out that they were able to play all these instruments? Is it just a matter of like picking it up and being like, hey, today I'm going to pick up a banjo and see if I can play it or all these other different instruments that you've got?
Well, it's a lot of it is that we have, like, we all have a bunch of different instruments. Like, I have a hammered dulcimer, I have an auto harp. They're not things that I play as often as I do a bass or a guitar or piano, but I pick them up every now and again, and just kind of, for me personally, string instruments come pretty naturally to me. So, if you told me, like, hey, learn a little banjo part that we're going to record here, like I could do that fairly easily, and luckily I work with talented musicians who are the same way, so it's a lot just based off of what we actually have.
It must be nice to work with talented people. I'm stuck with Brett, but
and I've been dragging you along
for years. We don't even want to talk about it. It's funny because I'm listening to you talk about it and you're just so casual about it, but I listen to the album and I go, like, there's parts that are just, they're soft and they're so unbelievably beautiful, and then it can go so heavy but even when it's at its heaviest, you know, when it's the growling and it still is beautiful. I don't know how the hell you pull it off, to be quite frank. It's a remarkable feat.
I think it comes from just like really feeling it and having it. It's an emotional moment, you know, when we get heavy like that. It's the way I always try and describe it is that, like, there's a lot of, especially metal bands, that feel like, if you're going to talk about intensity on a scale of like 1 to 10, 1 being not intense, 10 being intense, most bands like will hover like usually around an 8 for most of the song. And then when they get really intense, they only go up 2 notches to the 10, you know, whereas we use the whole spectrum. So, and I think when you do that and you have this moment of sheer intensity that seemingly came out of nowhere or built up to it after several minutes, it means something. It's not just, here's another heavy part, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm also interested in the orchestration part of the music, because certainly going into your website, I mean, that's something that you do, and then you have another member that does that. So, like, you know, mm-hmm. what does that entail?
Well, that's one of the lengthiest processes of making any of our albums. Is just the way we do it is, like, so Wayne is the other guy who orchestrates with me, and he's got a certain kind of style of orchestration and I've got a certain style of orchestration, and we luckily complement each other very well. And there's parts where I'll hammer away at this part, I'm like, I'm just not getting it. It's just not sounding the way it needs to. And then I throw it over his way, and it's like 5 seconds later, he sends me something back. It's like, oh, that's perfect. and it's nice to have that feedback system. But it's Wayne, myself, and Evan all sitting down and listening to the demos of each song and every timestamp, every little change in the song, we say like, okay, well, this part needs the brass needs to come in, be really brash, and then this part might be really cool if we try mixing in some synth layers as well. And we just have these just pages and pages and pages of notes of exactly what's going to happen in the orchestrations before even the note is actually written for them. And so it's kind of this process for a while that eats up a lot of time. And then we finally dive into the actual process of making the orchestrations happen and figure out how to compose them and arrange them in conjunction with the metal band that's happening.
How then do you find that translates to performing it live?
I think it translates really well. One of the hardest parts of playing live with this band is getting the mix right, because the orchestrations are such a big part of our music, and they really, like, our music sounds best, I always say, is when the orchestrations and the band are played together instead of one supporting the other. So it's really hard to do that because, you know, we have backing tracks run that play the orchestra parts and we play to a click so that everything's in sync. Now these backing tracks are all mixed kind of within themselves. I mean, they're the backing tracks from the album, but of course we go play live. We're not using the exact same amps, the same, you know, the sound check isn't the same, the tones are not exactly the same. So it's tough to really get it to all fit together perfectly. But generally speaking, we all have to tell engineers, like, pump the orchestra way up. It's the fifth member of the band, you know?
One of the bands that we talked to, I don't remember who right now, but they said that the best decision they ever made was to actually bring their sound guy with them on tour. Do you think that's something that you guys would consider?
It's definitely, like, something that we want to do, you know, funds considering. I think we would benefit well from the same guy night to night mixing the music and just, you know, with each time getting a little bit better, figuring out how to make every aspect of the music pop.
Who are the bands then that you would normally, I guess, be associated with and go out on tour with? Have you gone out on tour and found that you were kind of in a place where you were like, oh, I don't know that that's quite the right fit for Wilderun?
I've been told that, like, one of our strengths as a band is that we can kind of fit on a bill with almost any band because we have a lot of different aspects to the music. And, you know, we have played with a bunch of different bands, from, like, really gritty, like, death metal and black metal bands. We've played with folk metal bands, power metal, progressive metal, even, like, more non-metal bands. And what we do is we just kind of tailor our set list to whatever kind of bands we're playing with. So if we're playing with those heavy bands, you know, we break out Tyranny of Imagination, we'll break out Garden of Fire, you know, and we change it up depending on that.
You know, one of the things that was interesting to me was, because, you know, we look at it, we see the re-release, and you're getting Iron Maiden's Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, you know, mm-hmm. as the bonus track. And I'm listening to the album and I'm wondering, how do you put any song that isn't written by you guys into this album? And I started thinking to myself, well, that might be the right fit, you know, Seventh Son of the Seventh Son, besides probably being the best name for a song ever, best song title ever. I'm like, well, maybe that might be the right fit. And then I, you know, I got luckily had a, you know, the preview and chance to hear it. And I'm like, it works so well. But how did you come to that process of choosing that one? Was there any trepidation about, will this work, or, you know, kind of what was your thinking behind it?
Well, it was one of those songs that I think, like, when we listen to it and we just kind of, we, in our minds, we have to take away, you know, imagine it's not Iron Maiden playing it. It's like you're looking at the notes on the page. Notes on the page are not too far off from the kind of things that we would do. As, you know, you got this long song structure that evolves. It's got this big middle section with the narration and everything. It's like, all right, these are all kind of things that we would do. These are tools that we use. Now we just got to make sure that how we approach it sounds like Wilderun wrote that song, which is not an easy thing to do, but I think it's something that, especially with that cover, that I think turns out very well, and we figure out how to not over listen to the original song while we're working on it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, it's a great song to begin with, and of course, I think that that's the thing, like, as a metal fan, like most metal fans know the song instantly. So, it's like, what can you bring to that song that makes it sound like you while still kind of holding the bones of the original, for sure?
Yeah, well, it's one of those songs that I just kind of, like, every time I listen to it, the original version, I'm like, that's, like, it needs that big orchestra. It's this big bombastic song. I mean, granted, it's an awesome song. It's one of my favorite Maiden songs. But, you know, you hear these, like, in the beginning of the song, you hear these old school keyboards and everything. I'm like, that needs to be real sounding orchestra. Like, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's true, actually. You know, I mean, it is always interesting to me to how, you know, you want to take a song, you want to be true to its roots. You want to honor its roots while making it your own. And that's what you managed to do. And yeah, no, I was very impressed by that. It actually had me sitting there at the end going, I mean, if these guys did, like, we see it all the time. People do cover albums, and it's not usually, most of the songs could have been the original. And I'm like, man, with these guys, though, if they were to do a cover album, they could really do, like, some interesting stuff with some known songs. And I don't know if I'm not saying that should be your next project, but if you want to make it.
Yeah, well, it's actually something that we've been talking about. We've had that idea in our heads for years now, is to do something like that. But we've got a list of like 50 or 60 songs that we would love to cover. And we're like, when can we do something like that? But it's one of those tough things. Like, is it worth putting all the time, effort, and money into something like that? And then at the end of the day, you're dealing with all the legal issues of having to clear those songs, especially now that, you know, we're working with Century Media and stuff. Like, that would be a lot of work for them, I'm sure.
But it's their work. Come on.
50 or 60, and I'm like, yeah, I've sold. You just sold a copy of a 60 album. I would be totally into that. I can imagine
as long as we can make the record for $10, yeah, we'll be good. We'll make our money.
Now, that part might be a little bit more difficult.
Okay, I'll buy one too, so you can go up to 20.
All right, you know what? I'll buy two copies.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, keep it going. We'll have us up to 100 in no time. I'm sure that's more than enough for you, right?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, you'll see what kind of, you know, having Century Media behind you. I mean, like I say, it can only help, right, in the band's visibility. So, I mean, who knows? You have me excited, no matter what. Because, I mean, it has been 4 years since the last album. Are you already guys thinking about doing something much quicker this time? Has perhaps this downtime given you time to work on some things that you hadn't, you know, to put together something for the future a little bit quicker?
We have, actually. We've kind of got, like, the skeleton of a record fleshed out, more or less. And we're just kind of working right now on everyone's individual parts and, you know, getting into the early stages of figuring out what the orchestrations are going to be like. Kind of just, so we have the skeleton of a record, and we just got to figure out, like, how much meat and what kind of meat we're going to throw on it. So I'm hoping, you know, I'm hoping that we can release it sooner rather than later, like maybe sometime next year, even if all goes well. But yeah, definitely not another 4 years. I can say that.
Well, that's good. We don't want to wait another 4 years.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because I mean, it must take a while, of course, to make an album. Like, how long did it take to make this one, Veil of Imagination?
Yeah, it was probably about maybe like 2.5 to 3 years of trudging away at it and chipping away at every aspect. Now, I mean, it's not to say that, like, you know, we're working on that same music, you know, 8 hours a day, every day, each one of us, and it fitting it around our personal lives and our schedules is always a difficult thing, but it's It's one of those records that just needed a lot of time, especially for the orchestration, because it's just so much going on in there, and we wanted to make sure that it was all going to be heard, you know, that we weren't throwing a bunch of like cool orchestration stuff in there that in the end, come mix time, we're going to have to either take out or turn so low it's like not even there.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, you talk about the 50-60 songs, of course, that you would like to cover, like, but like, who are those bands that you look at and say like, oh yeah, this is who I listen to, this is why I got into this?
As far as like to what inspired me personally with Wilderun, I mean, there's a lot of different kind of music out there that I think fits into Wilderun's vibe, because I think it's not just like, you know, like, the, like I like heaviness, I like intensity, but not everything that's heavy and intense has distorted guitars and blast beats. You know, I think of a band like, or an artist like Scott Walker, for instance. Like I love the intensity of his music, especially like the album The Drift, and a lot of the textures on that record inspired me of like how we can approach the orchestrations for Veil, and especially like the new record, like what other kind of weird stuff can we do with it?
So then I guess one thing that I don't want to forget to talk about is the cover for Veil of Imagination, because that's an amazing cover. So maybe give us some of the history of that.
Well, so that was done by Adrian Cox, and he's a phenomenal artist who was a fan of us after we released Sleep at the Edge of the Earth. So he posted some stuff on our page, and we kind of just got to poking around his material, and we're just blown away by just this kind of fantasy, almost like impressionist kind of style, like lots of colors but very dark in emotion, which I think perfectly encapsulates what Veil is. You know, it's there's so much variety in the sound of that record, yet it's, you know, we try and still keep it heavy, we still try and keep it metal. So he was actually listening to a lot of Sleep at the Edge of the Earth while he was around the time he was making that piece, and it was just kind of in his back catalog. It was one of the things he sent us that he thought like might make a cool album cover, and we skimmed through a bunch of his stuff, and that one really popped out to us. So we saw that and I was like, yeah, that's it right there, and the rest is history.
You know, they say, or you know, there's a saying that albums are never really finished, they're just released. You know, do you kind of,
yep.
Yeah, you kind of believe in that. That's what it's sounding like to me. So that's, yeah, kind of something, yeah, you understand or feel.
Yeah, I mean, there comes a point where you have to just close the book and say, like, it's done, you know. You just, we spend a lot of time messing around with ideas, seeing, because in the ideal world, be like, okay, this part, let's see how many different ways we can present this part, and let's try them all, you know. And but realistically, especially come studio time, you know, you're paying by the hour or whatever. Like you got shit to do. Like you can't spend all that time. So we have to at some point call and be like, no, that's good. Now that's harder for some of us to do than others, but luckily, we work very well as a team, and when somebody says, no, trust me, this is good, this is done, the person who is doubting it says, like, okay, I'll just live with it, and then, you know, a day goes by, and they're like, yeah, this part's great, you know?
So you get there eventually is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Well, and I mean, you know, that's the thing, right? Where you've gotten to is certainly, I mean, it's just so different. And I think that's the thing that Mo and I both can't get over, is just, you know, listening to it, it's so different than you would ever really expect. And I think that's the great thing for us, is that it's just like, wow, you know, it's cool that people can be able to put this stuff together.
Yeah. Well, I the funny thing is, like, I don't see it as that different from Sleep for, I mean, I think Olden Tale sticks out to me as a much more different record just because it was, you know, a lot of the folk influences were very present and much of the songs were based off of pre-existing folk material. So when I think of it like in the song structure is like, okay, we go into each record with kind of a goal. We say like, we're going to stick to relatively these parameters and see where it goes from there. But it, you know, it all kind of comes from the same place. It's all just what naturally comes out of us. So I always find it interesting when people say that, oh, Veil sounds very different from Sleep, for instance. Maybe in the way we present it, and maybe that's what's most, what sticks out to people the most. But, you know, we've been sitting with this material for so long, it kind of, the core compositions is what really resonate with me personally.
I think a lot of it is the song order, the sequencing on this one, and the length, like opening was such an extremely long song, you know, things like that. Just, I think that's what creates the different feel. The sequencing feels very different in the length of the songs and where what fits where. And I think that's part of why, as a listener, I see such a difference between the two.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, definitely there's, I always think of Sleep as kind of having a part A and a part B. You know, you have the big Ash Memory suite in the beginning, broken up into four songs, and then it kind of, you know, it has this kind of vinyl side A, side B feel. And then there's the rest of the songs that are kind of the second take or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas Veil is definitely like one unit. It's like one long film.
Well, you know, we are, unfortunately, I can see here, we're at the end of our time with you. Please let everybody know where they can keep up with you and the band and the album. Obviously, Century Media has stuff, but what about the band's own personal, I don't know, Facebook or anything else on social media there that people can check out and keep up with you guys?
Yeah, Facebook is definitely the best place to keep up with all the news that we post, Instagram as well. And of course, there's always our website, www.wilderon.com. We always try and keep that as up to date as possible. Anything new that comes about, that's where you'll find it.
Awesome.
Well, you know, thanks a lot, Dan. Just wanted to thank you for coming on the show. So Veil of Imagination, the re-release is going to be out on July 17th through Century Media. So I definitely urge all the fans to go out and listen to that and listen to the rest of your albums, because I think a fantastic band, and we really enjoyed listening to you. So thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, we really enjoyed the chat. Thank you. You know, definitely recommend people check it out, because if you're looking for something a little different, I think this will blow people's minds.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Awesome. Right,
thank you.
Thanks, Dan. All the best.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye now.